Hear that? It's the sound of you catching up on all the latest and greatest fintech news, trends, and updates thanks to Streetworthy, Yield Street's bi-weekly newsletter. Stay in the know with CEO Milind Mahiri as he takes a closer look at what's happening in the fintech space, then breaks down what each story could mean for investors like you. Give your portfolio the edge it deserves and subscribe to Streetworthy on LinkedIn today.
Welcome to The Yield, the official podcast of Yield Street. Every week, we bring you the latest market insights across our asset classes and products from subject matter experts. Our aim is to break the outdated mold of investing and help you add financial fuel to your ambitions through innovative investing products and strategies typically unavailable to most investors. Realize your next level with The Yield. Subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. The views you are about to hear do not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street. This podcast is intended to be strictly informational and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a research report, investment advice, or the offer or sale of securities or any investment product. Now, let's get into the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Yield. Okay, so first of all, be sure to visit yieldstreet.com, www.yieldstreet.com, to learn more about our offerings. If you are an originator, check out our Raise Capital page. You'll see the link at the footer of our website, or you can send an email to us at originations@yieldstreet.com. Secondly, we'll answer questions all through, and we'll certainly keep a little bit of time at the end to just for Q&A. So please do send in those questions, and we'll try to get to as many as we can in the time we have. So without further ado, it is an honor and a pleasure to welcome two of our two guests today, Aaron Shum, the founder and CEO of Vestwell, and our very own Sylvain Grant, who's our chief product officer. Aaron and Sylvain, welcome, and thanks for joining us today.
Thank you, everyone.
So we're going to just have a chat about retirement accounts, 401ks, IRAs, and it's going to be fairly informal and just kind of like a candid forum-like chat. So like I said earlier, do drop your questions in a Q&A box at the bottom, at the base of your Zoom window, and let's jump right in. So I'd like to start with a little bit of background, Aaron. I remember we chatted maybe over 5 years ago when you were beginning to think about Vestwell. I'd love to hear a little bit about your journey from that point to where Vestwell is now incredibly successful and a great fintech startup in the city. What was the problem you're trying to solve and kind of like what was your journey from there to now?
Yeah, no, I appreciate it. Great to be here and always good to see you guys. So, yeah, we chatted about this, I remember vividly, right? We had a bunch of conversations early on when this is just an idea kind of percolating in my mind. But long story short, I've been in the fintech space for close to 20 years now, and had, prior to founding Vestwell, co-founded a wealth management platform, building it out to service kind of the mass affluent needs on the typical kind of RIA, broker-dealer, bank trust, wealth management world. And, you know, in that life, I ran product development and strategy, and I also ran the revenue team for the business. And kind of going into it as a small business provider or small business, right, being entrenched in the fintech world, we had to offer our own 401k to our own employees when we were about 3 years in and had about 30 employees. This is to date me, this goes back to like 2010. And I just lived the pain of how challenging it was, right, to offer a 401k plan to your own employees and being a principal of a business. So kind of putting my, you know, fintech hat on and looking at this and kind of unpacking it from the inside out and saying, how does this stuff actually get wired up and what makes this so complicated? That's what spawned to go build Vestwell. So we sold that business at the end of 14. I left in 2015 and kind of quietly slid out the back door to come really try to solve what I had experienced and saying, hey, you know, small businesses should not be held at a disadvantage when trying to offer some sort of retirement savings vehicle to their employees. And there's just, it's a complex space. It's super intertwined across, you know, various regulatory bodies to just the technology as a whole. And we just, I looked at it and said, hey, you know, it's time for a change with how this is being done and where fintech has evolved, right, and the pace in which things are moving. I was like, the time to try to change this is now. So that's really what we set out to do. it's grown rapidly. I still feel like we're just getting started, right? But, you know, we look at it through the lens of saying, hey, how can you actually start engaging within the workplace in the most efficient, effective way possible to help people save for the future? And that's really the crux of it. So we're always, you know, as we look at continuing to enhance the platform, mature it and build out different features and functions, it's really kind of all centered around that. So it's been great to see the interest in it. We're quite fortunate to you know, be in the position we are, but there's still a long way that we want to go to help take the industry.
For sure. And actually, it's a good segue into like talking about the retirement space in general. Like, you know, it's one of those things that you don't really learn about in college or anything. You kind of like left to figure it out for yourself when you enter the workforce. So I'd love to get your both of your thoughts, like Sylvain, especially like about like kind of the importance of just awareness and knowledge of this incredibly important part of your overall investment portfolio.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting that some of the maybe biggest decisions in life were not really equipped or trained in college or, you know, even in business school. You don't really learn about these things. Then to Aaron's point, you know, I'm not an American citizen, so obviously these things are different country by country. But, you know, when I moved to the US, like you hear about 401k, I had no clue about IRA. I've lived in six countries, and so every regime is different. And then essentially, at some point, you're told, hey, you don't need to understand the details. This is complicated. Someone kind of will do it for you. Just look into, like, you know, how young or old you are and put everything in, like, a 2040 target fund or whatever. Mm-hmm. So it's just quite interesting. And then it's passive investment. The fees are not transparent. And then I think if you connect it to also how people live and work right now, most people obviously change jobs. A lot of the people are part of what we call now the gig economy. And so how do you manage your kind of, you know, your investments over your lifetime and your retirement accounts? And I think there's a lot of things that are still not easily shared or accessible for people to understand. It's really like a kind of like a pool model. Like you need to ask, you need to like challenge things. And to Aaron's point, it is still very, very complicated. Okay. And I think Aaron, maybe you can comment on that and we can share a few stats. Because on one side, they are enormous. And on the other side, they are tiny, right?
It's interesting, right? And you think, you take a step back, right? And you look at like our parents' generation, right? And, you know, typically it was work for a large, you know, Fortune 500 type business, right? And you're there for the majority of your career. And you have some sort of a pension or some sort of savings vehicle that's applied in those large institutions. And then now transfer that to our generations and those behind us. You know, people are going smaller. People are more nimble. People don't stay at jobs as long as our parents' generation, right? And so there's this notion of, you know, the industry, the stack from a tech perspective that's built on is really from the pension era. Right. Sure. And it's been retrofitted into the kind of this defined contribution 401k IRA structure. But the underlying core of it hasn't really evolved. Right. So layer that on top of, you know, all the complexities from a regulatory standpoint, it starts to really get complicated fast. And so I think we're in this kind of interesting transition now where people are working at smaller businesses more and more frequently. They're popping up all over. Right. We look at our businesses, right, from start to, you know, we've all grown, but we all started with a few employees, right? Mm-hmm. And, you know, and now you're looking at saying, okay, well, I have to give my employees something. I have to be able to kind of recruit employees, retain them. And people are smarter, right? People ask about these things now, right? Stepping in the door, they're like, hey, what can you do for me as a potential employee for a business? So it's on us to really make sure that people are equipped and have something that they can provide their employees to save. And, you know, it's a massive industry, right? I think, but still you go back to how people save. You know, 75% of the American workforce still depends on their company's provided workplace savings plan as their sole source of invested asset. So you think about, you have your workplace savings that could be an IRA, could be a Roth, it could be a 401k, it could be, you know, emergency savings, whatever it may be, right? Think of anything that you can deduct from your paycheck before it hits your personal bank account. It's a really powerful place to save in kind of the trajectory of retirement investment career, right? In that path. So being able to equip individuals with the ability to have those established programs and savings vehicles along the way and make decisions without having to be experts is really important, right? And that's really where it comes down to.
Exactly. It's part of the service that you provide. I know Vestville provides its 401k services through the employer, obviously, because that. How much of this aspect of it do you cover as part of the platform, like the actual education and like, and helping individual, because every individual situation may be different, right? You know, is, should we do traditional or Roth? Like, what are the tax impacts or advantages or disadvantages? How much of that do you find yourself needing to do or providing that kind of guidance to as part of the platform?
It's a great question. So we provide a lot of it. We kind of look at it. We're primarily working through partners, right? Distribution partners, be it in the financial services realm or in the payroll HRIS world, right? And equipping their clients, who are the businesses and the employees that work for those businesses, to really step in and provide these retirement savings programs. So sometimes we're very, very active in that process, from like creating content and videos and all the things online that we provide to folks to quickly search and educate themselves on what they mm-hmm. can be doing. And other times people don't want us involved, and you know that there's a financial advisor and they say, hey, this is my job, this is what I want to do, and this is where I add value to my clients. We allow them to step in and do that. So we think about it through a flexible construct, but at the end of the day, someone has to be doing that, right? Whether it's us or someone else, it doesn't matter. I think as long as someone's providing that education, we're all doing our job.
I think a lot of people don't know the, on one side, Aaron mentioned the 75% reliance on the plans from your employer. At the same time, on one side, it's like a massive industry, right? Just sharing a few stats for people. Total U.S. retirement assets, $28 trillion, right? So that's like massive. On the other side, you look at it, and only 32% of Americans are investing in a 401k. So you have both a dependency locked in on one solution, and then you have money in motion that is very hard, and we'll talk about that, to move when you change. It's like, to Aaron's point, the system was not even designed for that, right? And on the other side, you have a lot of people that just don't have access or don't think about it because of, you know, the employer they work for or the fact that they are freelancer and it's just more complicated and difficult. So there is a lot of education to be made, but a lot of also access problem and accessibility problem that we'll talk about where tech is essentially trying to change the game and I would say freshen up a bit an industry that is overall stuck in the
and then dire.
Shall I say 70s to be nice, Aaron?
Yeah, right.
I mean, I honestly think that like the retirement industry, the investment, or like IRA and 401k industry, and the health insurance industry are collectively keeping fax machines alive as a piece of technology.
Very true.
But it's a very important point because, like you said, Aaron, our generation, and certainly even probably the one generation ago, the average lifespan of workers in a single job has dwindled from, you know, a whole lifetime to, you know, what is it now, like 4 or 5 years, and you like start moving to a different place. Portability of your retirement plan. So if you put that 75% stat together with, like, let's say 6 jobs over a working career, just put a number out, moving the money from one plan to another or rolling, the whole process of rollover is unbelievably painful. I mean, Sylvain, I think you can attest to that. Like when we were trying to move money around and across our IRAs, like.
Yeah, I think without going too deep into the detail, I've been in the U.S. for 7 years. When I came to the U.S., I joined a company internationally that moved me to the U.S., but it was a small company in the U.S. Mm-hmm. So we had a plan that was specific. Then within the company, we had to change plans, which also like Aaron, I think, can talk much more than me. And then when I switched jobs, I was like, what do I do, right? And I think the first time it took me, 40 days and with plenty of issues. I will not name the custodians. The second time it went very well, like no mistake, but it took me 32 days. And so think of like the world we live in where it's like you can open a bank account in like essentially 5 minutes and you're talking about your own money, your own investment money, with first very limited options within each kind of plan in general, quite high fees. You never read the footprint around the transfer fees, the exit fees, like, and all these details, right? That still exist mostly in the industry. And on top of that, it takes, you know, 32 days. So, and I'll talk a bit about what we're doing at Yield Street after, but maybe Aaron, you can provide a complimentary view on that.
I'd love to get your thoughts on it.
It's not pretty, right? And there's work that has to be done. So on the fee side, right, we've solved that, right? So we really are transparent and dramatically reduce the fees of the overall plan, right? We'd never want, fees should never impact the outcome of how you're saving for your future, right? So, or have that significant of a weighting behind it. So we really focus on that. Now, the rollover piece is complicated, right? And here's, one thing I want to explain, I think often you don't really realize until you're living it. As a business, right, you're investing X dollars from your paycheck into your 401k, and your company's matching, right? And there's some match aspect, and then there's some vesting aspect that happens behind it, right? Now, you leave your company before all of that reaches a full vest or a full match, and now what you have to do is unwind pieces of it, right? And unwind pieces of it and then place dollars in different buckets. And one of those buckets is called a forfeiture account and whatnot, because you can, it still stays in the plan, but is no longer associated with the employee. And then you have to move the rest of it. So there's kind of this unwiring and unbundling of it that gets really complicated that happens behind the scenes. Now there are better ways to do it. We're working diligently on doing that and how we segment cash types and whatnot on the background, right? Not anything that anyone needs to worry about. But these are things that we're trying to solve to make that more fluid, right? Or even getting a loan, right, or distribution in general is quite difficult. And oftentimes then it goes to who's ever custodying the assets, right? The bank behind the scenes, that's sure. Then oftentimes physically just writing a check, right? That's going somewhere, right? So now you're waiting in the mail, right, for our lovely U.S. Postal Service to deliver some check, right, to some entity or yourself to then go deposit, and then you have to wait for those monies to settle and clear. And so it is a painful process. I think there has to be one framework by which people are willing to sign up, I think, across the industry and become kind of a standardization that I think could really help create a more fluid transition process behind these plans. People are starting to do it on the wealth side. It hasn't quite infiltrated itself into the workplace savings side, but I do see an opportunity there. And then the underlying architecture can also get to a point where, you know, assets are more easily transferable behind the scenes. Like this is one area I think specifically in the defined contribution space where I think like a blockchain construct becomes very interesting, right? Where you can create an element of portability behind there that's safe and secure and easy to segment and move. Now, it will take years for these institutions to start to incorporate that in their overall tech stack. But I do think that there is a lot of opportunity there.
I'd love to, like, speaking as both an IRA account holder and a technologist, like, we always kind of dream of this world where you just, like, you pull out your phone and do a Venmo transfer to a friend. I would love to just slide across my phone and have my money move from one IRA to another. So there is obviously, you know, that's there's a lot of logistical hurdles to that. I would love to hear a take on, like, what are some of the biggest things that are keeping us from getting to that amazing place? And how many of those are tech, and how many are just, like, you know, other non-tech things that are kind of coming in the way?
Yeah, so I think it's two main things. One is tech, right? And, you know, you'd be so surprised, right? Or you guys wouldn't be surprised, but I think, you know, maybe some of the listeners out there, that, you know, a lot of these banks still require paper forms to open up an account. Right. And there's still someone that, you know, they're basically, you know, using the fax machine, right, to scan and copy in the form to open up the account and the custodian on the backside. So that process has come a long way in the last, you know, 10 years or so, but there's still a long way for it to go. And then the other piece of it, the second piece would be risk. Right. There is an element of risk, especially because when you're thinking of a workplace retirement plan, right, the employer is the one who's often on the hook for this. So if something goes awry, right, you want to make sure that they're covered in the process because they're the sponsor, right? That's where that notion of the program sponsor comes into play. The plan sponsor is on the hook for a lot of the liability behind this. You want to make sure you have, you know, everything checked off and buttoned up when you're going to move money. And I often say, like, to our team, like, we are touching the second most sensitive thing in people's lives, right? You have your family and you have your money, right? And it is highly sensitive and it has to go well. And given all the complexities in this, you just, you know, you try so hard for it not to get screwed up, right? Sometimes it does, frankly, right? Things that are out of our control, but that's really where it comes down. You know, it's sometimes to our benefit to take a little bit longer just to make sure it's right.
Yeah. And I think to maybe add to Aaron's point, and by the way, I totally agree with your comment on blockchain being actually a very applicable technology to that use case. There are some initiatives, right, that have been taken in the industry. They are not new, and they are not yet well adopted. And the system works when everybody adopts one piece. So, for instance, like ACAT, which is a automated customer account transfer technology, or whatever the acronym means, is basically a protocol that defines how to transfer more easily. It's not yet fully automated things between two custodians. And, you know, for instance, like we've launched the ability to invest in alternatives on Yield Street through a Yield Street IRA that is supported by a custodian called Pacific Premier Trust, and we support ACAT. But for instance, I think Rishi, without putting you on the spot, you were transferring your account from a custodian that doesn't support that protocol, and therefore it took you 30 days, right?
So 45 days.
And I think that's also where regulation, right, I think plays a role to your point around kind of the paper trail and so on. Like all of these things are totally feasible through technology. But if you look at the way a lot of the just the regulations or the rules are drafted, they have not necessarily caught up with all the last development of maybe the last 10 years from a tech standpoint. And so to Aaron's point on risk, it's about how do you like have the framework that follows? Because we're talking like trillions of dollars, huge responsibility, something very, very important. How does the regulatory framework kind of leverages all the development in technology? Because it is actually way safer, as we know from the tech side, and way easier to trace things when it's done digitally than with someone typing 5 forms with typos and mistakes, which is exactly what happens when you do an IRA transfer today, right? Like the potential for mistakes is actually quite huge.
Regulation and legislation is an important point, actually. So, Aaron, like in the course of building Westfell and kind of talking to different custodians, and like how much, if any, of how big a role can we play as, you know, people who work in fintech and who are bringing technology to bear on some of these complex problems to actually influence the legislation that can perhaps make these things easier going forward while kind of, you know, staying on the conservative side of risk?
Yeah, it's a good question. So, I mean, so we're highly regulated, obviously, right? We have to follow the ERISA law. We have the IRS component, Department of Labor, the SEC side from the investing aspect. So there's a lot of intertwined aspects of this that have to line up perfectly. I will say this, you know, in the years, you know, we're almost 5 years old now. We work a lot with the regulators. And, you know, I've gone down to Capitol Hill. We've had people come up and visit us from Capitol Hill, both from congressmen and women to senators, to SEC commissioners, and just sitting down and having open dialogue around where we see the world going and how we can make impact. We often are asked to provide opinions on legislation being put forth. And I will say there's just great openness from the legislative community to hear what we're doing, right? If you think about, like, we're so small relative to the grand scheme of this industry, right? And we haven't been around, you know, for many, many years, like a lot of these established traditional providers who are often kind of lobbying for self-interest, where we're kind of all stepping in and saying, hey, this is actually what technology can do to better everyone, right, in the equation and do what's right and, you know, create great businesses and help people save and close the retirement savings gap and so on. There's an incredible amount of openness around it. We've made comments, we've asked for things that have actually been put into bills and brought forth. So I think it's on all of us to really just bend the ears of folks and say, hey, this is what you can be doing. And you'd be surprised a lot of times they're like, wow, like we didn't know this is possible. Right.
Sure. So it's an easy thing to find consensus. I think like the only disincentive when you talk about moving money around, especially moving money from one IRA to another, is losing custodian who doesn't have a strong motivation to kind of lose the money. Right. But outside of that, speaking of it from an investor first mentality, which is actually one of our one of our core values here at Yield Street. I'm sure the same for Vespo as well. It's a win-win. Like, there's no reason for the different parties involved to not find some common ground, consensus to kind of move on the regulatory side of things. I'll get to some more interesting things on tech, but a question just came in. So it's a bit of a long one, so bear with me as I read it. The question is, wondering if we can comment on how fintech may change where people invest, as opposed to, like, you know, their retirement plans are self-directed. And do we think because of cheaper and quicker flow of information means more retail investors investing outside the U.S. and or maybe more foreign investment in U.S. markets?
Yeah, I think maybe let me start on that. I think in my view, it goes back to the topic of access, right? So let's take away for now retirement plans. And there are specific regulations, you know, for instance, with your 401k, you have restrictions on where you can invest. But this is really the topic that is dear to our hearts at Yield Street around access of unique investment opportunities for retail investors. And if you think traditionally, most people have access to, you know, equities, bonds, mm-hmm. and maybe a few other things, right? And then you add your retirement plans to the picture, and usually it's even a more limited kind of pool of investment opportunities that you can invest in. And so what we and you know, through the Jobs Act and many other things, many other regulations in the US have expanded where you know, retail investors can invest in. The SEC, as recently as in the past few months, have revisited some rules around many of the basically eligibility for different investment vehicles. And so we feel, you know, that's one of the rationale for which Yield Street has developed the Yield Street IRA product in order to invest into alts. And again, we see that as a natural trend and continued trend that also will kind of percolate to the retirement accounts. I think in terms of, you know, investing outside of the U.S., this is a bit, and maybe beyond your question. And again, we're a registered investment advisor, not giving advice. So we actually cannot give advice per the SEC regulations. But behind your question, maybe like around inflation and different how different geos behave, there are definitely you know, investment opportunities outside of the U.S. How do you do that in general is really a topic around access for investors. Again, going back to equities and bonds, where we see this is kind of common. And then additional restrictions that have started to come down on some retirement space with your IRA, but like I've not yet reached out, for instance, the 401k. And maybe Aaron, you can speak to some additional pieces as you're definitely on a 401k involved, including with some legislation comments.
Yeah. I mean, so obviously the ERISA notion where it's all U.S.-centric, right, in the way we think about it. And I'm not an advisor, so just to disclose that. But, you know, kind of the way I just think about it personally, right? So you have your workplace savings. That can be your 401k. It could be an IRA. It could be your 529 for your kids. It could be emergency savings, whatever it is, right? Those are really critical, important vehicles to use to help save for long-term future retirement needs, right? So I kind of bucket it in two separate aspects, right? Just personally, right? You have what can you do on a tax-deferred, tax-exempt basis within the workplace that allows you to save for long-term future, long-term, you know, investing in that sense. And then there's also other aspects where you may want some additional liquidity and you want some, you know, whatever type of investment may be. Maybe, you know, through Yield Street and alt type structure, depending on what you need. I think what it boils down to, though, is really understanding your own profile as an individual and what your goals are and what you're trying to save for, right? And then plan around it. Say, okay, if X dollars to do something with, what do I do, right? And then think through, you know, liquidity needs and you know, investment horizons and everything else around that. Now, there is a lot of information. Things are more accessible than ever, right? And it's just constant, right? You can't even keep up with things these days, right? And you look at Twitter or whatever, right? It's impossible. So I think you gotta kind of sit back and kind of cancel the noise for a second. Say, okay, what is most interesting to me? What do I want to do? And then take the strides, do the homework, do the research, educate yourself on what's available, and then step into it, you know, with just the sound mind and kind of logical rationale behind it. It's very easy to get caught up and, you know, just kind of go into like a Twitter feed and like see something and all this, you know, hype, whatever. And you're just like, well, this isn't everything, right? This is kind of an echo chamber. So just be smart about it.
Dogecoin or something.
Right, exactly. So, you know, which sometimes can work, I guess, but, you know, but in the workplace side, you know, we get asked around ESG, right, and making other things available, right, and making sure we can incorporate that. So we're working hard on incorporating ESG strategies. Oftentimes people bring up crypto or Bitcoin, right? Can I invest Bitcoin in my 401k? And, you know, it makes me uncomfortable to a degree, right? But I'm also like, I get why people are interested in it, right? And could you? There are vehicles that that can help facilitate that, right? But then it comes down to who's liable for that, right? And making those decisions, because, you know, as an employer offering, making that available, they have to disclose and make sure that they're not on the hook for something that would go awry, that's a little bit more risky to be done within a workplace long-term savings vehicle. So I would just say, you know, just do your homework, figure out where your plan is, and then start marching towards it.
Yeah, it's, you know, outside of your standard market type, you know, stocks and bonds type of investments, there is a probably slightly lesser known set of retirement options or investment options in general, but specifically around retirements that maybe, Aaron, you had some insights into, like annuities are, I've heard people talk about as another vehicle. And of course, going beyond the market for which, you know, you have specific kinds of accounts like the solo 401ks or my self-directed IRAs that you can actually invest in alts and stuff.
Yeah. So quickly on the annuity front, the way I think about this is kind of, so as you think about your investment horizon and your career, right, you kind of reach this point, let's say you're going to retire at 65. So you're in your mid 50s and you start thinking about kind of coming out as like a soft landing, right, out of your formal career. And so we think about that through like a managed outcome. Like, okay, let's just manage towards a soft landing. And then this idea of being able to incorporate a guaranteed income structure, typically in the form of an annuity, right, on the backside of that is very attractive, right? Now, there are things about older annuities that are definitely have a stigma that, you know, I'm not a fan of, but there are newer, kind of takes of it, where they've stripped out a lot of the stuff that, I guess, made it more messy or made it, gave it a bad rap or a bad name, like around like surrender fees and things like that. So when you strip those away and you can structure a guaranteed income product in the form of an annuity, whether it's in the plan or soon after you retire and you kind of roll out of the plan, those can be really helpful in someone's career and planning around it. So there's a lot of people working on it. There was a group of several institutions that got together that recently created a product. It's very new. That are working to kind of do this in-plan to out-of-plan guaranteed income structure. So it's exciting to see the evolution. And I do think there's a large appetite for it, right? If you say, you know, you're going to have guaranteed income, like who doesn't want that, right? Everyone's like, yeah, sure. But it's like, well, what's the cost of it? And how do I actually manage towards that? So, you know, people are getting smarter. Technology is helping facilitate that. And where I think we're going to see a number of products pop up that people are really going to be interested in.
Yeah, I can't wait to see like what else. And it's actually, it's a nice segue into kind of like one of the things that I wanted to just have like an open canvas to think of what is the future? Where do we go from here? Kind of thing. Like we've already come a good distance from the 70s, as we said, like technology has been brought to bear on many of these problems and challenges. But as you said, there's a lot more left to go. So what's next? What are the next frontiers that we want to conquer in this space with tech?
There's so many angles you could take this, right, or look at this from. I look at it from kind of two lenses, right? The main thing is around basically with accessibility, right, to the question that was asked. I think so being able to kind of get creative with that and make that come to life is kind of point number one. And then point number two, I think we touched on earlier, is around portability, right? How do I continue to move, right? Your friends in the industry, we've gotten into this dialogue around like, who owns your bank account number, right? Does your bank own it or do you own it, right? Why does a bank own it? It's just a number to them. They don't really care. Why can't I just take that bank account number, move it wherever I go, right? And take it with me and kind of, you know, just kind of continuing to build on that, right? And being able to just take your assets and move it and carry it with you, no matter, irrespective of wherever you want to be at that moment, right? Yeah. I think, you know, the more we work towards that, I think the better spot we'll all be in it, right? And then it's become this retention game, right? And everyone working to retain the clients and that are there that are helping them continue to grow their businesses. But there's just a world of opportunity and things are going faster and faster and people are more apt to it, right? We couldn't have this conversation about our respective businesses, you know, 10 years ago, right? it would have been such a long shot for it to actually be successful, right? And now we can sit here and be like, wow, yeah, there's a huge market appetite for this.
There's a lot to be hopeful for. Sylvain, what do you think? What are we going to do next?
I mean, I agree 100% with what Aaron outlined in terms of the Premier League of Access, which, to be honest, is the cornerstone of what Yale Street was founded on, and also something that will never disappear. And even going back to a question from the audience around geographic accessibility, right? That's another dimension. I think one part that gets always tricky, right, is around, we go back to the idea of nations with tax laws that are like specific to nations. So I think if we want to be, high level and philosophical for a moment, I think we have to talk about also the idea of nation states that, you know, are not so old in history, or only two or three centuries old. And the idea of, like, you know, at least some global taxation rules. And there are some, right? Bilateral agreements, et cetera, that make these things also less complicated. So I think the dream of portability, I think 10 years back, right? Changing a phone number was complicated. Right. And then there's been both tech improvements and regulatory framework that made it, at least in many countries, very easy and essentially a very smooth process, not everywhere, sadly. And I think to Aaron's point, like, I think the most recent privacy laws with GDPR, CCPA, et cetera, I've kind of like triggered a lot of discussions around what belongs to whom. Right. And the fact that the core information about you, your data, actually belongs to you. And in a way, I think tech has, you know, conflicting roles to play in that, right? Because on one side, tech kind of helps that, you know, portability be real and traceable and ownable by the user. On the other side, there is like, the rise of the monopolies that want to control data about you. So I think it has to be distributed. It has to be a framework where people can play. And I would connect that to the rise of the gig economy, where if you ask, I don't know the exact stats, but I think if you ask most 13 to 18-year-old kid, what do they want to do? We used to talk about, you know, being a fireman, a nurse, or whatever 20 years ago, and now it's becoming a UPU star as a freelancer. So think of that and what it means to how you think about your goals, your retirement money, the idea of freelancing, et cetera. Like, it's just the time horizon is not 30 or 40 years. Yeah. You plan for maybe like, you have some goals to, I think Aaron's point around like the importance of goals and time horizon and risk profile and objective is the key one. And then you need to have the different products that match those goals and objectives. And so I think then we go back to access again. So I think there's a lot of things that have happened very positively in the past 10 years. But in a way, we're just at the beginning of that access. And then, you know, it's about education, it's about transparency, and a lot of other things that make it important to scale.
Delightful experiences on top of all of that. So you don't have to, again, go with fax machines and wet signatures. So we are just about at time. I do want to thank both of our guests, Aaron and Sylvain. Thanks a lot for joining and having this fun discussion. I hope our listeners got something out of it as well. Just before we wrap up, you visit yealstreet.com for our latest offerings. And also be sure to tune in tomorrow. We have a special show lined up. We're going to premiere a new series on the Yield here at Yale Street called Women in Investing. And our very first episode will be tomorrow with our CMO, Whitney Racklin. We'll be moderating a conversation around myths about women and investing with Barbara Stewart, Meredith Jones, and Jane Barrett. So do tune in tomorrow. And thanks again, and see you soon.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of The Yield. For the latest updates on the alternative investing space, go to yieldstreet.com. Be sure to subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, and Stitcher. If you enjoyed the show, feel free to leave a review on Apple Podcasts, as this will help other investors like yourself find our show. If you have any questions, please visit us at yieldstreet.com. Thanks again for listening, and see you next week. The Yield Street podcast you just heard only reflects the opinions of the host, who is an associated person of Yield Street, and does not necessarily reflect the views of Yield Street or any of its affiliates or other associates. The podcast is for informational purposes only and is not intended to be and should not be construed as a recommendation to buy or sell any security and is not an offer or sale of any securities or investment product. The podcast is also not a research report and is not intended to be and should not be construed as investment advice.
Support for this podcast comes from Yield Street. Trying to time the stock market can lead to regret. At Yield Street, our alternative investments are designed to create predictable secondary income streams, providing you with tools to help put your money to work immediately. These investments in asset classes like art, real estate, and legal finance typically have low correlation with the stock market and target annual yields up to 7 to 10%. Welcome to the next generation of investing. Welcome to Yield Street. Sign up today at yieldstreet.com.